Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's February 9th, 2018 program, Winter Olympics, Two Koreas Under One Flag. This is the 19th program in our 2017-2018 programming year. I'm Sandra Bishop, City Club President. With tensions rising in the Korean Peninsula, it was a surprise to many to hear that North and South Korea would be fielding a joint women's ice hockey team under one flag. 27 years after the last joint team fielded by the two countries. So today we have Dr. Song Na-ri, and he will recount some of the history of the peninsula and share his perceptions of the current situation between North Korea, South Korea, and the United States. The City Club brings together civic-minded people to make Eugene a better place to live, work, and play. We're a member-supported nonprofit. Our members have a direct influence on public policy. Become a member of City Club at cityclubofeugene.org. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including Luvas Cobb, Attorneys at Law, Network Charter School, LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens, and one of our Sapphire sponsors, George Rohde Repair Shops, providing car care with a conscience, with three repair locations in Eugene, Euro-Asian Automotive, Stadium Automotive, and Auto House, or online at eugenerepairs.com. And special thanks to PacInfo and Simplified Computing LLC and KLCC Radio. City Club programs are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 at 6:30 on Monday following the Friday program. The coordinator of today's program is Randy Prince. We'd also like to thank Q Ho Yum, whose help on coordinating this program has been invaluable. And I think, unfortunately, he was not able to get here today. So we want to thank both of them for organizing this important discussion. And now I'd like to turn it over to Randy to introduce our speaker. Thanks.
Thank you, Sandra. Well, the Super Bowl is over, but February is not done with spectacular sports events. Today is the official opening of the greatest of international extravaganzas, the Olympic Games. And this year's Winter Olympics are in Pyeongchang, South Korea. They run through February 25th. Athletes from 92 countries are participating. You'll see them tonight in the opening ceremonies, marching behind their national flags with a few exceptions. The most significant of the exception involves South and North Korea, two nations that are technically at war, but will march behind a flag depicting the territory of the two countries without any border between them. How'd that happen? Well, many Olympics have involved major political issues, but it's hard to recall any recently where the games were both a focus of international diplomatic efforts and located in the place that's the subject of the dispute. The dispute, of course, is the one between the North Korean government that has been working to arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles that can reach U.S. territory, and the United States, which is determined to keep that country out of the nuclear club. The diplomacy seems to be between North and South Korea, although the U.S. Secretary of State has maintained some channels of communication with the North in spite of opposition from his commander-in-chief. There is no U.S. ambassador to South Korea. The last one left when our new president took office over a year ago. There was a nominee for the position, but late last month, the administration withdrew his name when he expressed disagreement with recent U.S. policy. So it's a difficult situation and hard to see just how we're going to get past this crisis without some disaster. Many years have passed since the Korean War was halted by armistice. Most people here and there were not yet born in the 50s. Most Americans don't visit there or understand the language, and we're in the age of information overload. But fortunately, Eugene has a strong community of Korean Americans, and today we'll draw on that connection to better understand how there might be a peaceful way out of this problem. Our speaker today has extensively studied the history of Korea and Northeast Asia from ancient times through the modern era. Beginning in the late 50s, Song Na-ri's studies in the U.S. have earned him four master's degrees and not one, but two PhDs. His interests are not limited to Asian studies, which is the subject of two of his advanced degrees. His other primary field of study concerns Israel and the Middle East. He holds a PhD from the University of Pennsylvania's Center for Advanced Judaic Studies. His undergraduate degree is from Butler University in History and Political Studies. He also studied History and Biblical Studies at Northwest Christian right here in Eugene. Today, Dr. Reese serves as Academic Dean and Professor Emeritus at Northwest Christian University. While at the U of O, he holds the title of Courtesy Research Professor in the Center for Asian and Pacific Studies. We're very pleased to have him here today. Dr. Ree, welcome to the City Club of Eugene.
Thank you very much for this invitation, and thank you for holding this program on Korea and Winter Olympics at Pyeongchang, South Korea. According to the news from Korea this morning, the opening ceremony already took place last night, but you can see the video, the program of that tonight, 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock. But it already opened last night. The opening ceremony was awesome and went off without a glitch. Under the theme, Peace in Motion, Peace in Motion. To symbolize peace in motion, there were smiling faces of Moon Jae-in, the president of South Korea, and Kim Yo-jung, the beloved sister of Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea. They were holding hands, smiling, and Mr. Kim Jong-un's sister declared the opening of the Winter Olympics. I'm going to mention these two names several times in this program. Moon Jae-in, Dr. Moon. He is the president, current president of South Korea. And I'm going to mention Kim Jong-un. He's the leader of North Korea. He has the nuclear weapons threatening you. So don't get confused. Just remember who they are. One is the president, Moon is the president of South Korea, Kim is the president of North Korea. Okay. The athletes of South and North Korea entered last night, the opening ceremony, holding a white flag, with a picture of the Korean Peninsula called Unification Flag. One of the major objectives of the Olympics is to promote international peace. And I think the IOC is doing its best in this regard. Today, South Korea is in a celebratory mood. As a nation hosting the Olympics, there is a lot of excitement. South Koreans are proud of their accomplishments. 60 years ago, when I was in Korea, South Korea lay in ruin, total ruin, devastated by 3 years of war. How many of you have been to Korea? Were you in Korea at that time? Oh my goodness, you have a good memory. Korea was one of those countries that Mr. Trump would call to the, you know what. Until 50 years ago, it was in abject poverty. Per annual per capita income, only less than $100, imagine. It was a poor, one of the poorest countries in the world. They are proud today that they are now the world's 10th largest economic power, and that they host the International Olympics, not just once, but for the second time in 30 years. And I must say that Koreans are also very proud of the fact that they produce the world's best and toughest women golfers. when Mr. Randy Prince first contacted me, he said, I suggested a program on the difficult situation in Korea, specifically on the views of those in South Korea as well as opinions among the local Korean Americans. The phrase difficult situation in Korea caught my eyes. I said, how does he know the situation in Korea is difficult? I said to myself, he's very perceptive. He must know a lot about Korea, I said. Yes, there is a lot of excitement in Seoul today, but there is also a lot of tension, discord, confusion, worries, and anxiety in the peninsula. There is Moon Jae-in, the president of South Korea, and his government trying to initiate a rapprochement with the North. There is nuclear-armed North Korea trying desperately to survive the harsh economic sanctions imposed upon it by the UN and the US. There is the United States in the midst of the Olympic Games threatening to impose the toughest economic sanctions yet if North Korea does not dismantle its nuclear apparatus. South Koreans are badly divided among themselves about President Moon's recent decisions to unify the North-South women's ice hockey team. To have a picture of what the people of South Korea are thinking at all levels, I have been watching the news from Korea online every day, religiously. I also have an access to a TV satellite stations of Korea, through which I can get news from Korea instantly as they happen. I have a stack of news articles from Korea that I have pulled from the online news channels. I don't think you want me to read all this today. Fortunately, I found a report on an opinion poll taken recently, just 2 days ago, on the current issues in South Korea, about what Koreans in South Korea are thinking about what's happening right now. Please keep in mind that this opinion poll was taken not by the opponents of the government, not by the opponents of President Moon, who has made these decisions to unify with North and South, but by pro-Moon and pro-government party. They wanted to prove that the majority of the people in South Korea support President Moon in his decision to invite the North to the Olympics and also to unify the women's ice hockey team. It would be like the Republican Party here taking an opinion poll to prove that President Trump is doing a superb job in foreign policy. So keep that in mind. The result, however, was not quite what the pro-government party expected. They contacted over 1,000 adults throughout Korea, South Korea, and asked a series of questions. Question: do you approve President Moon's decision to invite the North to participate in the Winter Olympics? 53.3% said no. Majority of South Koreans are opposed to President Moon's inviting the North to participate in the Olympics. Question: do you think unifying the women's ice hockey team with the North is good and helpful to the nation? 50.3% said no. Why not? 63.9% of those who said no said, because some of our women athletes were forced to drop out. trampling of individual rights? No, no. South Koreans don't approve of that. Especially their daughters and sisters? No, no. That's bad. 28% said, we just don't like unification, period. Question, do you favor political unification of the North and the South? 63%, that's a big majority, said, no, we don't want North-South to be unified politically. We prefer coexistence, but not unification. Question, are you satisfied with the President Moon Jae-in's appeasement policy toward the North? 58.4% said, yes, that's okay. 37% no. Now this sounds self-contradictory, right? Because the majority are negative about the North and about the decision to unify the North-South teams. But there's a reason why they think the appeasement policy is okay. And I'll explain it later. Question, do you think the United States should launch a preemptive strike against the North? 70.1% said no, absolutely no. We don't want the U.S. to start a war in Korea. Well, what do these responses say? What message are the majority of the South Koreans are trying to convey? They seem to make the following points very clear. One, the majority of South Koreans are against any war in the peninsula. They know how bad war is. They went through it. I went through it. I know how bad it was. Two, they wish that the U.S. will not do anything in Korea to start a war. Three, they support Moon's appeasement policy, but not because they like North Korea or they favor unification, but because at least it is preventing war in Korea, in the peninsula. Four, they do not approve President Moon's being too chummy with the North. They do not approve of him being so almost subservient to Kim Jong-un, as he has shown, demonstrated, trying to get North participate in the Olympics. Especially so when the North is holding its nuclear weapons. Five, knowing the harsh, brutal, and totalitarian conditions in the North, majority of the South Koreans prefer coexistence of the South and the North. They don't have a war, they just want to coexist. If it takes forever, fine, just coexist, but don't unify. They don't want to be unified with the totalitarian communist North. They know how bad it is up there. The big question is, what after the Olympics? Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, has an ulterior motive in accepting Moon's invitation to join him in the Winter Olympics. He wants to weaken the U.S.-South Korea alliance. He wants to find a pretext and a reason to demand the withdrawal of the United States troops from South Korea. Already yesterday, having now participated in the Winter Olympics, North Korea issued a statement saying, now that there is peace between the North and the South, there is no more reason or justification for the U.S. military presence in the South. There's no more reason. Go home. There's no reason for the U.S. troops to station in South Korea. Now we are in peace. It's time for the U.S. to withdraw from South Korea. That's what they've been demanding for the last 70 years. And this is an excellent opportunity, they thought, to take advantage of, to demand that again. Will Kim Jong-un have succeeded in this objective, weakening the U.S.-South Korea alliance? Will he succeed in forcing the U.S. troops to withdraw from South Korea now that there is a peace? It depends on what President Moon Jae-in of South Korea will do after the Olympics. Anything he does in the way of helping the North economically, which he did before when he was in power, he is wanting to do that very badly. He wants to help the North economically. Anything he does in the way of helping the North economically without addressing its nuclear apparatus will create a crisis, a major, major crisis in Seoul and in Washington. If President Moon Jae-in does anything in the way of helping the North economically after the Winter Olympics to maintain the so-called peace that has been established during the Olympics, the U.S.-South Korea alliance will crack, and the U.S. could go by itself, striking the North, bypassing South Korea. That's the biggest worry today in South Korea among this majority of South Koreans, that U.S. will simply bypass South Korea and strike the North alone. Because U.S. is not going to allow Kim Jong-un to hold on to his nuclear weapons, period. So that's a crisis brewing at this point. As for Moon Jae-in, he will claim a huge victory after the Olympics. Huge success, he will say. Because he helped the Winter Olympics to be held in peace. He prevented the North from attacking, from disrupting the Olympics with some provocative actions. He will say, I did it. I know, I can read his mind, every bit of it, deep inside. And I've been studying him, his mind, his soul, for some time. I've been reading every speech he has made, every campaign promise he has made. I know where he is, what he's thinking. That's another story. It'll take another couple hours to talk about that one. But his critics in South Korea will ask, Moon, when you had Kim Jong-un's sister at your dinner table in your house, did you have courage to tell her that her brother's nuclear weapons have to go? Did you tell Kim Jong-un's sister when you had in your house at the dinner table? Moon's critics have already told him and will remind him again and again that he has done more harm than good to South Korea by acting like an obedient puppy to Kim Jong-un, and that he was used and outsmarted by Kim Jong-un in his political game. Kim Jong-un is not a stupid guy. He's a very smart guy. Not only that, he's surrounded by smartest brains in North Korea. Don't think they don't know what they are doing. Smartest brains in North Korea are around him, telling him what to say, what to do, how to react to Washington, how to react to Trump, all of these. His critics will tell Moon that he has emboldened Kim Jong-un. As a matter of fact, only yesterday, an expert on North Korea expressed a grave concern about the days to come. Professor Park Chung-hyun, she's a senior research scholar at the Brookings Institute and the world's foremost specialist on Kim Jong-un. This is what she said. Neither the U.S. nor South Korea, but Kim Jong-un of North Korea has now emerged as the main driver, not just the main driver, but an arrogant, self-confident driver in the affairs of the peninsula. Of course, the U.S. can always strike him with nuclear weapons, but in political talks, he's the main driver now. Kim has emerged as an arrogant, self-confident driver in the Korean Peninsula affairs, not only because he has the nuclear weapons and the powerful missiles, but because President Moon of South Korea has subserviently begged him to participate in the Winter Olympics. When you bow down, asking somebody to do something, you are showing your weakness, not your strength. He has already shown his weakness. Professor Park says, feeling arrogantly self-confident, Kim Jong-un is no longer on the defensive. He is now in an offensive posture. He is going to take aggressive actions to satisfy his big ambitions. One of his big ambitions is to bring South under his control. No one can predict what he will do next. That's the statement from Professor Park yesterday. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we have a first questioner today. Zhang A Li will be asking the first question. Zhang A is a University of Oregon doctoral student in East Asian languages and literature, and she's a native of Seoul, South Korea. She specializes in North Korean dialects, and she has interviewed many North Korean defectors in South Korea. So I'd like to ask her to come to the mic.
Yeah, thank you for your speech.
Probably it's better for me to be there. I can hear her.
So as you said, especially older Korean citizens and Korean media strongly criticize current situation and President Moon Jae-in. But however, as I belong to younger generation and I am more progressive in this situation, and I cannot fully understand the points why people criticize President Moon Jae-in too harsh. So for example, in 2002, for World Cup in Korea, South Korean soccer team was searching for North Korean soccer player to unify soccer team. At that time, there were a lot of objections in Korea too, but I think the degree of criticism and objection is quite different from 2002. So compared to the last previous government and World Cup situation, and how do you address this situation?
That's a very good question. The last time, about 10 some years ago, when the South Korean government unified the North and South team in soccer game, basically most people welcomed it and they liked it. 10 years later, today, it's changed. How do you explain that? That has been the biggest question in South Korea among the intellectuals and the media, and many of those articles I pulled out address that very question. What they have found is that the very young people that Moon Jae-in, President of South Korea, depended on for support, they were the ones that turned against him. It's not the older people, but younger people, those in the 20s and 30s, who are the major bloc in the last election, getting him elected to president, they turned against him. Why? Why did the young people who President Moon thought his power base turned against him? There are several reasons, but one, they just don't like the state trampling upon the rights of individuals. He, above everyone else, he is a lawyer from human rights. He claims to be defender of human rights, every individual, and yet he trampled upon the rights of Korean women in the name of the state. They don't tolerate that. Two, they are not the same as the generation of 10 years ago. The last, they grew up, in the last 10 years, they have grown up with a threat, under the threat of North Korean nuclear weapons and missiles. They've been hearing North Korean threat every day. And they know about North Korean nuclear threat. They've been growing up with that consciousness. Not only, in that sense, they're so different. very impressionistic. They just don't like North Korea anymore. They like, they, in 10 years ago, they said, maybe we can get along. These young people say, there's too much difference between them and us. That's one of the reasons, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So quite a bit changed in 10 years in the way of young people thinking. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very
that
much.
That is a very good question. Yeah.
Yes, very good question and very good answer. So we're going to take a break for about 5 minutes to formulate questions from each table, and then we'll return with the audience questions. Remember, only City Club members may ask questions at the microphone. So we'll be back in about 5 minutes. Thanks.
You're listening to KLCC, informing and inspiring listeners for more than a half century. Broadcasting in HD at KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. You can find us online at klcc.org. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College.
Welcome back to the January 9th, 2018 City Club program, Winter Olympics, Two Koreas Under One Flag. City Club is a nonprofit organization. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including Luvas Cobb, Attorneys at Law, Network Charter School, LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens, and one of our Sapphire sponsors, George Rohde Repair Shops. And a special thanks to our in-kind sponsors, University of Oregon, Academic Extension, Dot Dotson's Photography, and KRVM 91.9 Radio. Before we go to member questions, just a reminder, please keep your questions short and to the point. So please go ahead. And we have a brand new City Club member to ask the first question.
Hi, can you hear me well? My name is Chris Page. I'm a brand new member as of today, and I'm excited to join this group. And I, in support of Two Koreas Under One Flag, I'm wearing this indivisible sweatshirt. My question is, in your opinion and the opinion of the South Korean people, is the U.S. military presence in Korea a benefit or a hindrance to peace on the peninsula?
Good question. You know, I'm a product of the Korean War, and I was with the U.S. Army during the Korean War. I served as a translator for the U.S. Army. I'm a 1,000% pro-American. I'm a 1,000% pro-U.S. Army. There would be no South Korea today. I can guarantee you, I can say that absolute certainty, there would be no South Korea or democracy in South Korea today without the U.S. military presence in the South. North would have taken it over a long time ago. That's simple. That should never be questioned. South Korea would disappear even tonight if US troops withdraw. It's that simple. And and to debate on that issue is, my father was not a Salvation Army, but he used to call US Army the Salvation Army. He said, they came to save us from the North. And he would say the same thing today. You know, he passed away 1975, but he would say the same thing. The North has never given up its ambition to unify the peninsula under its flag, period. That should never be questioned. The only reason why they have not been able to achieve that goal, that dream, is because of the presence of the U.S. troops in the South. And unfortunately, there are many in the South who are pro-North Korea. For one reason or another, it's beyond my understanding. Why they are in support of a totalitarian regime is just totally beyond my imagination. But there are quite a few in the South who are supposed to know and want the U.S. troops to withdraw. They're in same tone with the North, which is unfortunate.
Great. And if we could, if the questioners could go back to their seat after the question, then Dr. Reed can address the camera and the rest of the room, too. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm Jack Dresser. I'd like you to address a larger context for this. Can you hear me? Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd like you to address the larger international context. I see this as a four-handed game. First of all, there's two, I think, basic issues. One is the North Korea feels the desperate need to have nukes as a protection against the United States. As one of the members of the Axis of Evil, the first of which was totally destroyed, they really need North Korea. They need nukes. They need that credible threat of deterrence. They're also holding South Korea as a hostage. So if the U.S. attacks them, they attack you, or attack South Korea. Okay, but I think the larger game is between China and the U.S., and Korea has always been basically a pawn in that game, maybe a rook in the game or a knight in the game, if not a pawn. And China's getting stronger and stronger. The U.S. is trying to reassert its dominance in the Western Pacific, where it has really no right to be. And China is developing the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They're taking charge of the South China Sea and the East China Sea. And I think Korea is right in the middle of this, as it has been since the end of World War II, which they didn't have any voice in whether they wanted to be divided. You know?
Does that make sense as a question, Dr. Reed?
Well, yeah, I asked him to address that larger. Well, the question is to address that larger international perspective.
What is your question?
The question.
Nuclear weapons, or should they not?
Well, I think they will have them, and they will keep them because they have to.
What is the question?
But the question is to address that larger international issue.
So I just want to...
As we all know, the United States has been pretty sensitive about North having nuclear weapons. I don't believe the U.S. is worried that North Korea can attack the U.S. They are smart enough to know that if they attack the U.S., they'll be just obliterated. The United States is trying to get rid of North Korea's nuclear weapons, not because it's afraid of them for its security, but because U.S. fears that North Korean nuclear weapons will go into the hands of the terrorists, especially to the Middle East. And you can imagine what will happen to Israel if North Korean nuclear weapons go into the hands of terrorists and certain Middle East countries. This is the biggest worry of the United States, not that it's going to be attacked by North Korea. Okay, so.
Thank you.
Jerry Diethelm, City Club. You were very clear about the importance of the American presence in the demilitarized zone in Korea. The question at our table, though, is about the potential for withdrawal today, if the situation has changed, and what the thinking might be around the possibility of removal of American troops in Korea after 70 some years of presence there, and whether the international situation has changed enough for that to be a possibility.
That's a good question. At a certain point in the future, can the U.S. withdraw its troops from South Korea and they become united? As I told you, I have been studying Moon Jae-in, the president of Korea, his soul, his mind, what he's thinking, what goals he has, what aspirations he has. I've been reading just about every speech he has made, his campaign promises and so forth, and his actions, and all the statements made by his closest friends and advisors. I've been analyzing them. I have identified certain things about Moon Jae-in. First, he has an unquenchable conviction that North and South Korea happen to become united. He has an unquenchable conviction that Korea has to become a unified nation. It cannot continue on as divided. Sandwiched between big powers, China, Russia, Japan, the Korean people cannot survive or prosper divided as it has been. So they have to be unified as one nation to survive and to prosper, sandwiched among these nations. That's his unquenchable conviction. Two, he believes that God has given him mission to achieve it. It's religiously convicted that it is his destiny to help achieve it. And so what he's doing right now is all part of that. Three, he has identified three major obstacles in the way of his achieving his goal. What are they? One major obstacle. The North and South are two radically different ideologically. One is totalitarian, the other is democratic. One is Leninist, communist, Marxist. One is free democracy, free market economy. It's like water and oil. As long as South Korea, North Korea remain ideologically so different, they cannot come together. He cannot achieve his mission, you see. Politically, two different systems. Totalitarian system, one-party rule. South Korea is just like the U.S. Parliamentary system, three branches of the government. Two different. They can't come together. Three, third major obstacle in the way of his achieving his goal, United States. That may surprise you. He considers the United States and this U.S. presence in Korea a major obstacle in unification. But he cannot tell Washington, go home, we don't want you anymore. He can't do that. But he's going to work toward that. How? One, two ways. He has already worked it out. How is he going to do it? First, he's going to change the public opinion gradually, step by step. Not immediately, but step by step. How? By controlling the media. He has already brought four major public television stations under his control. Education system is already under his control. So he's going to start changing the minds, the attitudes, the perceptions of the people. That we have these three major obstacles and got to do something about it. And the second of his step, change the constitution of the Republic of Korea. Change the constitution. Constitution is preventing from the two coming together because they're so different. Constitution spells out what South Korea should be like. Current constitution prevents South Korea from even getting along with the North. So change the constitution. And he's doing it right now. He's pushing every day. Change the constitution. He's telling his support party, change the constitution. Very interesting. Before he became president, he vowed to the people that major problem of Korea is that all the political powers are concentrated in the president. He said, we've got to change that to make Korea more democratic. Disperse the political powers. So make president weak in the new constitution. That's what he said. That's what he vowed. After he became president, he's not saying a word about that. He wants to keep his office powerful. In fact, monarchical, imperial. And his critics are attacking him on that right now. But he wants to change the attitudes, the minds, the views, perceptions of the people through the media, gradually, make them more pro-North, gradually make them perceive that maybe U.S. presence here is not very good for us. Maybe it's time for them to leave. That's what his form, when he was in power 10 years ago, that's what he was doing, precisely. He was the chief of staff of President Noh Moo-hyun 10 years ago. That's what he was doing. Now that he's president, he's doing that. And once he has changed the constitution, what he will do, you see, his party, as it is preparing for the change of the constitution, adopting new constitution, it has removed the word free from the new constitution. Free. That's the center of South Korean society. Free democracy, free market economy, individual freedom. He wants to remove that word free. He wants to add a clause about social economy, that Korea government should be working more for the social economy. Capitalism is going to be out. Free market economy is going to be out. He's trying to make South Korea come closer to the North system. Then that'll be the time when the U.S. troops can leave and unite. Okay. So
we're short on time, so I just need to tell you we just have probably time for two more questions.
Hi, I'm Raisa Maddox. What I wondered, you've been clear that Kim Jong-un is right now clearly the person in the driver's seat.
No.
I wonder if you can speak a little bit about how our change in administration in the United States might have impacted that power dynamic.
Oh, well.
These are very simple questions, aren't they?
I know that Moon Jae-in, the president of South Korea.
Oh, Dr. Reed, could you use the mic?
He got jolted when President Trump started talking about first America first. South Korean security has been totally dependent upon U.S.-South Korean alliance, military alliance. Now, when President Truman started talking about America first, Moon Jae-in and other South Koreans started to ask, what does that mean for us? What does that mean for us? If he's pursuing America first, suppose if we are attacked by the North, will he protect us? He says America first. If he thinks what's happening in Korea is detrimental to the United States' well-being, he's not going to support us. So it raised a huge question in the minds of Moon and the Koreans, and that just unfortunately reinforced the Moon's thinking that we cannot rely on the U.S. alliance. Besides, it's detrimental anyway. So doubly, it's been detrimental. And how that affected this dynamics, how this made Kim Jong-un emerge as driver, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question. I don't think anything Trump or Washington has done or spoken that has contributed. I think it's more of what Moon Jae-in has done, by basically, as his critics say, he's been kowtowing to Kim Jong-un. Kowtowing, you're showing you're weak. We're weakness, and the guy who is being kowtowed, he's going to take the greatest advantage of that, and that's what he's doing.
Okay, we have 3 minutes for the next question and answer.
This is a very quick question, probably a long answer, though. My name is Roz Stein. You briefly mentioned something about Moon and the status of women. So I'd like to hear about the status of women in Korea.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, if you ask a young Korean male in Korea today, ask, how do you feel being a Korean male today? He says, I feel like an underdog in Korean society. You see, even my childhood days, say 70 years ago, but even later, 50 years ago, women were nothing in Korea. They were nothing, they were treated like a chattel. My mother, my sisters, they were treated like a chattel. They had no rights whatsoever. Now they control everything.
How did they do that?
I'm sorry, we don't have time for another question.
They rule men. I mean, and men don't complain about it. Men don't complain about it.
You wouldn't dare.
Because they know the past history, how bad men were to women. And all through Korean, thousands of Korean history. They welcome it, and I wish my mother, were alive to see today how free women are. And 30 years ago, 40 years ago, men would have never entered a kitchen. Touching a dish, dirty dish, unthinkable. That's barbaric. Now you see men going into the kitchen, washing dishes. Everything's changed upside down today. Okay. As for President Moon, as I said, he claimed he is a human rights, he has been a human rights lawyer. And now I'm beginning to wonder if he was using that for his political gain. But he this claimed to be defender of every right, even the lowest member of society. But what he did recently just defies my mind. He did not. He even vowed that I will protect every right of every daughter, every sister. Well, he trampled upon the rights of daughters and sisters just like a dirt by forcing them, even one, about three or four got forced out. That's not acceptable. That's only, you see that only in a totalitarian state, mm-hmm. not in democratic, where individual rights have to be respected. So,
thank you very much. We're good.
He probably decided to make this decision politics, but I don't know if I answered your
you
question.
You did. A little
very good answer. Thank you.
In Korea, yes, the women are very free. They have lots of, they are judges. Just recently, two women were made generals in the army. They rule.
All right. Thank you very much. Before we thank our speaker today, I have a couple of quick announcements. Thank you to public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Monday at 6:30 following the Friday program. And thank you to Community Television of Lane County, cable channel 29, for televising recent City Club programs. And please join us for the next couple of Friday programs. On February 16th, we have Cleaner Air Oregon, the proposed rules, the effect on health and business. And on February 23rd, we have Eugene as a Gigabyte City, a Mozilla Grantee Showcase. So please join us for those. And I'd like to thank our speakers today, Dr. Song Na Ri, and our first questioner, Song Ah Lee. Thank you very much for coming today. Thank you. That concludes today's program.